Welcome to How I Raised It, the podcast that goes behind the scenes with entrepreneurs who've raised capital. We uncover the tips, tricks, and techniques they use to get investors to write a check. Strap in and turn it up.
Hi, welcome to another episode of How I Raised It. Today with me is Tanya Bakalov of Hello Team coming out of Boston. Tanya, how's your day going?
Good, Nathan. How are you?
I'm very good. Is your city of Boston just going crazy right now with the Super Bowl, or have you been to so many Super Bowls it's almost a non-event?
It's almost a non-event. No. It's actually, it's quite busy. There's a lot of pre-game type activities that either the office space or the city has organized, so it's going to be quite the Sunday coming up.
I can imagine. I spent previous playoffs at a sports bar surrounded by 300 Patriots fans. And as a Denver Bronco fan, I can't honestly support the Patriots. But anyway, I just hope for a good game. So good luck.
It will be fun. Thank you.
Okay. So tell me, what is Hello Team and why did you start this business?
Hello Team is a modern engagement and talent management platform. So what do? We help companies increase their employee engagement, impact retention, and help chief people officers create data-driven backed people strategies so they can do those things. Because as a company, what do you have to do in order to grow fast? You have to hire the best talent. When you have that talent, you have to make sure that you keep communications very open, especially in today's world where people are working remotely and they don't get to see everybody face-to-face every day. So how do we keep that close-knit team with the same culture when we started? And as we're growing, we're just adding to the culture with more people and maintaining what, you know, made us great to begin with.
Did you come from HR background, or were you a chief culture officer at a company, or how did you get into this?
Early on in my career, actually, I'm a CPA by trade, but in 2005, my husband and I started another startup, and that was 11 years. We sold the business. It was very successful, and the company grew to over 500 people worldwide in a lot of kind of remote offices. And firsthand, I saw that when we were all together in the same office, maybe at about that 100 mark, things were easy. We would just turn around, swivel the chair, and, you know, say hello to somebody, or kind of we knew who's who, what knowledge they had, what they can help us with, what goals they were working on, etc. And once the company started growing, adding remote people, bringing in people internationally, different time zones, we had to work so much harder to kind of keep that culture growing as we were adding, you know, 20, 30 people sometimes a month to the company in order to grow to, you know, double speeds that we were doing the previous year. So this is kind of a lot of the do's and the don'ts from that company. I've worked with my great development team over here to make that into a reality in my new platform, Hello Team.
Cool. That sounds pretty useful. So how much have you guys raised, and in what form? Did you have friends and family? You sold your last company, so did you fund this yourself for a period of time and then raise outside capital? What's been the funding path?
So actually, as I was in the first company that we did, it was very much bootstrapped for the first 2-3 years, and it was just my husband and I. And at the time, we were, you know, early 20s, we're both recently out of college, just gotten married, we're both immigrants. And it was very kind of hard to go out and raise money. It was 2006, 2007, 2008 when it was not the right time. People were still coming out of like the 2001 and then going into the recession in 2008. So it was pure kind of blood, sweat, and tears until we were able to gain our first base of customers and raise money. So this time, having kind of the experience and having the relationships, it was when I was exiting my first company, I went to the same people that invested in my first business because they already knew who I was and what we was able to achieve in my tenure at the previous company. And I said, hey, I have this idea. And it was really nothing more than a slide deck at the time. I had no developers, I had no platform, I had no sales team, nothing. It was just me and the idea. And I said, are you willing to back me up? And they did. So I was able to raise my first seed round, which was $1 million between two venture companies. I participated also in sort of as an angel in that, and a couple of other angels. So so we just actually in January closed our second, what we call post-seed round, and kind of the with the same group of ventures companies, adding as well a few other angels to the mix.
Gotcha. With these two VCs and a couple angels and yourself, is one of the VCs the lead, and who is that, or is it a?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, because I've known it's the two groups is Bain Capital Ventures, who are right here in Boston, and Osage Venture Capital, who is in Philadelphia, which is where my previous company was located. And funny enough, we're playing, as you mentioned, in the Super Bowl, the Eagles. So I am 75-25. it's hard to keep up who am I loyal to, but I'm a Boston fan now. Anyway, so they both, I think more in the first one that I raised it, Osage was the lead, and then this time Bain was the lead. But we're just very much working as a team, because that's one of the things. It is really a marriage when you bring on investors, and you really have to trust. They have to trust you. You have to trust them, and that's more important than who's kind of taking the lead. That's more for the paperwork, so to say, than really how the interaction goes inside of the conversations and the company.
It's interesting. On a little different topic, when you invest in your own company, you came in on your round, as you mentioned. How does that work from an actual logistics or cap table structure? You have your founder's common stock, and then when you invest in your own money, do you get preferred stock? How's that work?
So, yes. So what happens is that I actually have an LLC, which I invest in other companies as well as my own business. It's called VT Technology Ventures, and I've invested in probably about 10 companies, other startups that some of them have already exited, and some of them are doing quite well. And you, the same time that you're doing the round for whatever the round is for, I can participate based on the consent of the rest of the majority holders as VT Technology Ventures. And you get the same rights that the rest of the investors do. And then obviously as a common stockholder, that's the common stock that you get. But it's actually, even in our previous company, and at the time, it was all we had really, because all of our eggs were in the same basket as founders. We didn't have any kind of saving that we had. Whenever the company started raising money, we would invest as part of that. So when we exited the company, we received both preferred shares and common stock shares as an exit, which was great. So that was one of the things that I wanted to repeat with the same business. So I am in the same position as the rest of the investors, and I win or lose together with them, which makes it very much par pursue and in the same boat. So I want this business to be successful just as much as they do.
Yeah, of course. Good. So in picking these venture firms, Bain and Osage, you had worked with them before, but when you decided to raise outside capital, did you go out and shop around other VC firms, or did you kind of just run a private roadshow, if you will, to these two firms?
I wouldn't call shopping it around. I did go. You always want to be talking to as many people as possible. So, and some of those conversations were also facilitated by the other venture firms. They would introduce me to people that they've either done deals with before, or they've been in the same syndicate. So that makes it for a warm introduction, or, you know, VCs that I knew from the past. It could be VCs that just reach out to me on LinkedIn. LinkedIn has been a great source for people to reach back out to me. They see the news, they see the activity on Hello Team, and they would just reach out and want to have a conversation. And you kind of put everybody in that mix. And when you do get a term sheet, then you can go to the same people that you've already spoken to. They've gotten to know you and say, I received a term sheet from so-and-so. We were raising this much money. There's this much opportunity for you to participate. And then they can decide based on their investment thesis if you're too early for them, or if you're too late, or if you don't have the minimum revenue requirements, or whatever it is that they do. So, but it's much easier with people that you know and that know you than kind of doing a cold call, because it is going to take a longer period of time. If you're doing somebody that doesn't know you, and especially when you don't have a product or you don't have the revenue, you're kind of like early on in the process, it's hard for those big VC firms to, it's going to take them a year, it's going to take them 2 years to really get to know you and what your business is about before they make a decision.
So to be clear, those two firms had invested in your previous company, or they just knew you from the previous company?
They had invested in my previous company.
Okay, that's interesting.
True. Yes.
Yeah, that's nice to have. How many VC firms do you think you talked to before landing on these two? And how long was the whole process to raise your most recent round?
Mm-hmm. I would say it took me, even with the people that I knew, just to figure out, how much money do you need? How much runway do you want to do? Well, do you want to do a seed? You know, is it going to be equity? Is it going to be convertible? What are the terms going to look like? It takes 3 to 4 months, and that's just with the people that know you. If it's people that don't know you, it will take 6 months to a year. So you kind of really have to, if I want to be raising another round in December, I have to start now kind of making, you know, talking to other people and getting them acquainted with the business and our strategy and what we want to accomplish. So it is a full-time job. You have to run it like a sales process. There's prospecting on both sides. There's conversations you have to have. There's due diligence. But I have to say that at least it's a very open process, and people don't want to waste their time just as much that they don't want to waste your time. So sometimes even over an email, be like, no, it's kind of like not a good fit for either of us at this point of time. Most of the VC's firms nowadays have an investment thesis that it's even right in their emails. So if somebody reaches out to me and says, oh, we invest in companies that are in growth stage over $10 million. Well, if that was my previous business, that's a good conversation to have. I'm a year and a half into this business, I would be wasting my time and their time even now. So I'm pretty open with that and say, hey, you know, maybe we can talk later in the year. I'm looking more of C to A versus, you know, A to B. Let's talk at that time. So and even in the companies that maybe have not been interested in me and were in the seed stage, they'll reply pretty fast and saying it's not an industry we're interested in or whatever it is. So you quickly can shift your focus. So that's one of the things I say, don't kind of go and waste a lot of time chasing people that you just don't fit. There's going to be those exceptions, and people have made exceptions for me because, let's say Bain Capital Ventures, they do invest in growth stage companies. They're not necessarily focused on the seed market, but because they've known me for 6-7 more years, they can go ahead and make that bet. For a lot of people, that would be, you know, they'll just say, my investment thesis is I only invest in growth, and that's who I pursue.
That's interesting. Yeah, no, I think that's good advice. I think founders spend time chasing the wrong prospects all the time and trying to convert people. You can't really convert an investor. You know, it's sort of, well, I shouldn't say you can't, but it's often a pretty quick decision in many cases whether it's a good fit. You don't like convert them later over wearing them down, you know?
Yeah, that's right. Like once they tell you no, they probably talked to somebody, they figured out. And this is also one of the things that, you know, you have to put yourself in their shoes to see what would work for them too. Because if you look at those VC firms, typically partners would do one to maybe two deals a year. So that's as much bandwidth that they have in order to, but they have to go through 300 probably companies to narrow it down to one or two per year because they, you're on the board of 10 companies. There's only so much you can do yourself. So, that's why it's a pretty quick decision from their end. If it does not check all the boxes, they'll want to talk to you again in 6 months or a year, and you just keep working at it. And when the time's right, things will come back enough. And sometimes say some of these decisions are blessings in disguise, and you look around and say, oh, good thing I didn't take that money, you know, a year ago, or it's a better opportunity, or I'm at a better position to actually have a better valuation because I've been able to secure this many clients, or had I had the money, maybe I would have gone in and hired more expensive people that I didn't need, and they just didn't jive with my culture, and they left in 3 months, and now I burned through all this money with nothing to show. So yep. I say with every single thing that happens, there's I've never had a moment where I've, you know, looked back and I said, oh, you know, it didn't work out for the way it was supposed to work out, so to say.
Interesting. What do you do a regular? Do you keep in touch with the folks that you've talked to that might be potential future investors? Do you keep them warm? Do you send out your monthly metrics or quarterly metrics, or do you do any kind of like ongoing engagement with future prospects?
Oh, that's a good question. Probably I'm not as proactive as I should be, but you kind of run through your process in your head too, and you know within your gut where what has a potential and what does not. So I would say I have a very good proactive relationship on both sides with my existing investors and the angels. I would say that I probably don't run too much of a process to keep everybody else in, because there's only so much time in the day. You know, you post a lot of things on LinkedIn. If people want to follow you, they're interested in your progress, they'll come to you. That's how I view it. Me saying, hey, we did this and this. I don't think it's gonna, like you said, it's not gonna make them change their mind or all of a sudden wake up tomorrow and say, here's a term sheet without, you know. So they can keep their keep up abreast on all the other social channels of what's happening with with your company.
Yeah, for thinking ahead to the next round, I'm assuming you'll probably raise another round. Do you have, when will you know it's time to raise your next round? Do you have like a target number of customers or monthly revenue or kind of any triggers that will sort of signal it's time to go raise more money? Or is it simply when the bank account is, you know, a certain point?
You can't wait too long because the bank, you know, when you have a burn rate, it's just, no matter what you do, you have it. So you can't wake up today and say, oh, there's no more money in the bank account, I need to raise money. You have to, usually the best way to raise money is when you don't need them. So now is a good time to kind of start reaching out to, because I've just closed the round. I am, I have a good pipeline of customers. I've built my team. I have a great product. And now I just have to execute and make sure that I'm hitting those milestones. But at the same time, I want to, you know, reach out to some new investors, maybe, like I said, maybe the other ones that passed the first time, and update them. And you want to talk about when raising money, when you literally don't need the money and you can walk away.
Sure.
But at the same time, you do need some time to show the progress, because otherwise, oh, well, I just closed the round. I have to put the money to work to show that progress.
Yeah. How closely do you monitor your burn rate? Is that something you're pay attention to pretty closely? So,
well, you're talking to a former CPA, so right. I am I am obsessed with the budgets and spreadsheets and just kind of overall financial process. So I'm very much that's how I run my life, independent of my companies as well. So I'm very much on top of what we're spending money on and how to make the most bang for your buck every single day. And that's how I kind of try to run my team as well, that they have to treat the company's money like their money, and it everything ties together. If we're not doing well as a company, nobody's going well. And it's worked for me before.
Yeah. Well, so, okay, let's riff on that just a little bit. You're a spreadsheet, master. How do you think about future fundraising strategy versus the dilution? I mean, if you run multiple scenarios, it's kind of interesting when you raise multiple rounds, and especially big rounds, what that does to, of course, founders' equity. And I don't know, do you have a general strategy, like keeping things lean and mean and raising a minimum amount as possible? Or are you thinking we go big the moment we kind of have, product mm-hmm. market fit, and dilution be damned? I don't know. Do you have any kind of thoughts on
that? I mean, the reason we had the outcome that we had in our first company was because we were very non-dilution, I should say, focused. And at the end of the day, that's what you work for, because you're not making a lot of money as a CEO founder. I mean, in the previous company I worked for over 2 years for $0, and my husband was making probably the poverty age at level at that time, just to pay our monthly bills. So you really put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into your company. So you have to be kind of cognizant of how you dilute yourself. At the same time, you don't want to be stifling the company where it cannot reach its full potential, because all you think about is how can I keep that to myself. So you have it's like a fine balance that you play every single time that you go out and raise that money, so your company can be healthy.
Yeah, I don't know your space very well. Are your competitors well funded? Is that factor into your equation of how much to raise? Is it a heavily funded space you're in? I don't know.
I mean, for sure, it's a mature market. So the HR market as a whole, there's definitely suites in kind of the big players like SAP or Oracle or, Workday, if you will, which is like the second most market capitalized company after Salesforce. So if you look at those big players, they're very, very well capitalized. But what we have, as with any other startup, is you're nimble, you're UI is beautiful, your engagement with your users is much more better, so you're playing in that niche basically. But I can't, you can't fight the 800-pound gorilla, so to say. So you do the best you can with the money that you have. They're gonna outspend you no matter what. My $1 million is their daily spend, so you can't compare that. But you could definitely put a better product out in the market and win your fair share of customers to make you profitable as well.
Interesting. Couple more questions on, Bain is one of your investors. And when I think of Bain, I think of the strategy consulting. Does their check come with a consultant attached, or is it totally separate? No,
it's totally separate. So there's Bain Capital, which is the private equity group. Then you have Bain and Consulting, which is the, like you mentioned, those are the consultants. And then Bain Capital Venture is just the VC arm of Bain Capital, the private equity firm. So there's really no, it's totally kind of separate entities.
Gotcha.
A lot of people that, you know, work at Bain Capital Ventures that may have been at Bain Capital, but and you have reached to some of their portfolio companies that way, but otherwise it's very, very separate.
Okay, great. Kind of a totally different topic. You're my number two female on this show.
Who's the first one?
The first one was really great. She was Whitney Casey of a company called Finery, doing what she called an operating system for your wardrobe. It was pretty interesting. She's in New York. But so, you know, I've done 12 and you're 2 out of 12. I think the math I saw somewhere was like women have raised like 2%, if that's right, of venture. So maybe was it any tips for women looking to raise money, or did your gender play a role in it, either positive or negative? Any commentary? If not, you can skip this question.
It's such a hard topic. We were just actually, I'm part of this group in Boston called the CEOs, but CEOs. And we were just discussing that article ourselves, that it was 2.1%, I believe, that females get VC funding. And then what was even worse was that it was 0.19% that get follow-on funding. Mm-hmm. So that's just even, it's not even statistically, relevant. It's completely insignificant. It's that low. I don't believe in my case either, or it has played to my advantage, so to say, or to my disadvantage. I think you just kind of do it on your merits. One thing that's also, I'm doing this, I don't have a co-founder. It's just me. So they really have to rely on me to make this company successful.
Where did the husband go in this next startup, or is he off doing?
He's actually raising money for his startup. Oh. So maybe he could be your, once he closes his round in the next 30 days or so, maybe he's going to be number 20 on the podcast.
There we go. I like it. Yes. Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Two last questions. Any tips for folks navigating the Boston scene, other Boston entrepreneurs, any resources? I know there's a ton of stuff in Boston, but just like you mentioned, this CEOs, any groups or things to check out in Boston to kind of get started?
There's a ton. We have a women innovation group. There's it's just specifically for women. There's the Capital Network, which puts a lot of events for angel investing. They invite all the angel groups. There's a very good kind of network here of at least 5-6, if not more, of those groups that you can go and pitch your idea. And then obviously the angels decide whether they want to invest or not invest. There's, I am, as part of my previous company, I actually won the ENY Entrepreneur of the Year for 2016 for the Northeast Group. So that's a great, and this year I'm a judge. So it's a great kind of network with other entrepreneurs, whether female or male. Bain is doing an event next week that I'm invited to. So if you want to participate in things like that, then and expand your network, there's a ton of possibilities to do that.
Awesome. Actually, I just thought of one more question before our last question. Because you're doing some investing yourself in 10 startups. What are the best questions that entrepreneurs ask you, or what questions do you ask investors to make sure they're a good fit? I got asked this a couple days ago. I thought it was an interesting question. Like, what do you ask a potential investor to make sure they're good for you? Almost the due diligence question for them. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Right. I mean, one of the things is like, how do you support the people that you work with? Because again, one partner is responsible for at least 10 companies in their portfolio. So you have to, are they going to have time for you? Are they just, is it just going to be like drive-by management in a way? I'll just come in and ask you a bunch of questions and leave. How are they supporting you? So even with the people I work with, they introduce me to other companies all the time. So I say, can you, you know, I just saw you invested in so-and-so. Can you shoot a note to their CEO and introduce me to them? I can use their, I look at their network and say, okay, is this a network that is in my space that would be good for me, for them to be an investor? So that's the one of the questions that you have to know what they're going to give back to you. When it comes to angels, then people just say, you know what, I like the space, I like your idea, I like you, whatever, here's money. They don't want to be, they have their day job, or I don't participate in the other companies, what they do, or I'm as interested, right? But when it's a professional VC, you need to know how are they going to do when it's not such good days, because that's the other thing. If they're going to kind of bail out on you and just put all the blame on you and not be supportive, then again, it's kind of like going into a bad marriage again. You made a deal with the wrong people.
Yeah.
They're there for the sunny days, and they take the umbrella from under you when it's the rainy days, and that you have to kind of know and check them out based on that.
Very interesting. Yeah. Okay, last question. What one piece of advice would you give your younger self? And I guess you could go back as far as your first company or starting this one, up to you. What one piece of advice would you give yourself, you know, starting this all over again, thinking about raising capital, started?
I would say, because before I did it with my husband, and you had somebody to kind of bounce off ideas, or how did this meeting go? Like, what do you think? Should I have said this? Should you have said that? How could we do it better next time? Or you can divvy up and conquer some of these responsibilities. And I would say probably to myself right now, like, don't jump into this again, like on your own. Make sure that you either have a co-founder or, if it was my husband again, he's just not interested in the HR space as much as I am.
Uh-huh. Yep.
But we are in the same office space, so we can kind of still talk about stuff, or we'll walk to work together since we're downtown. But it's not the same as when you're kind of like living the same thing every day. It's my problems and his problems.
That's interesting. That's great that you're both entrepreneurs. That's good. And
if you could go into a meeting when it's with your co-founder or somebody else, and when they ask a question, you could say, well, you know, can you answer that? And right now it's, oh, I have to know the answers to all the questions. And sometimes that's hard.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Tanya, this has been great. Any shout out to the audience here? I guess just check out helloteam.com. Is that the call to action?
Yeah, just check out helloteam.com. And if you are a fast growing startup and you're heavily looking for the best talent, and then you want to make sure you retain and engage that talent, please check us out. There's a lot of good resources on our website. And I want to thank you, Nathan, for having me on the show, and hope to be here again soon.
All right. Or your husband. I'll get you for your next round, and your husband when he's done. So we'll just keep it going. Very good. Well, thank you very much. Have a good rest of the week, and go Eagles. Sorry, I have to just throw that in there.
Go Pats.
Okay. Bye.
All right, Nathan. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.